This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Some animals are more than just pets. They are highly trained and selected to be dogs with a job. Frequently, they provide guidance, do physical tasks, and are emotional comfort for their owners. The Americans with Disabilities Act protects these authentic service animals, but there's a growing number of people who like having their dogs around and who can blame them, and they just want to buy a service dog certificate online along with the vest, and the next thing you know, it's a service dog. Well, what's wrong with that? These pets are not trained. They can cause problems in public places and on airlines. So now there could be a crackdown of this abuse in the service dog system. It's going to impact the real service dogs and the people who depend on them. Well, what do you think needs to be done to address this problem? Do you actually see it as a problem? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You could also email us at The Source, and you can and tweet at us at TPR Source. We're joined this afternoon by Laurie Galco, and she is the founder and CEO of Service Dog Express. Linda Porter-Weslaff is the board member for the Therapy Dogs of San Antonio. David Favors with us. He is the law professor and editor-in-chief for the Animal Legal and Historical Center at Michigan State University. Welcome to the Source, all of y'all. It's great to have you here. So let me start off with a clip from our voicemail line, and this is from Kimberly.
My name is Kimberly. My family has been involved with the Guide Dogs of Texas since its inception almost 30 years ago. And 5 years into that, we realized that there was a discrepancy in the licensing and certification of service dogs. It's a two-edged sword. My mother is a dog trainer, and she's very proud to be able to do that. However, she's now being faced with having to make the decision to decline training of dogs for people who decide that for whatever reason they want to call this dog their service dog. And the dog is totally inappropriate. She would be more than happy to train the dog as a at-home companion, a canine good citizen, even a visiting or therapy dog, but not as a, quote, licensed, certified dog.
So we're seeing how people who are using this loophole, this could be impacting the entire industry and putting pressure on people who are trying to license actual therapy dogs who go through the training and through the selection process. So Linda Porter-Weslaff, can you address that? Is that something that's impacting you?
It is. Whenever there's a privilege, there's an opportunity to abuse that privilege. It is, as you said, people that are very interested in having their animals with them and to take them places where they really might not otherwise be able to go. With the proliferation of online certification and licensure programs or opportunities, people can very easily now identify their animals as either service or emotional support animals when they really haven't had the training. And it takes training for the person as well as the animal. And a service animal specifically is designed, the legal component of that is designed to target a particular disability and an animal trained to meet that specific disability. And so when trainers are asked to work in general with training an animal, they're not really training for a specific service or a disability for that, a service for a disability. And that's problematic because a person can have a well-trained dog in general, but that doesn't make them a service dog. They can, however, now easily go online and pick up paperwork that would imply that they are.
Laurie Galco at Service Dogs Express, how is this impacting you? What are your concerns?
It's impacting us greatly. We opened up in 2012, and we have a very strict code of conduct by which all of our trainers are held to. And that is not only in the selection of the right temperament and trainability of the dog, but when we match them with clients who have disabilities, our company works with all disabilities except for guide dogs. And so we have to go through with our clients very, very specific training so that not only can the handler who has the disability and the service dog perform professionally in a public setting, but also the dogs have to be task trained. And task training means that they have to be able to do specific tasks that are related to the client's disability. And this takes a very long time. It takes an incredible amount of effort by the handlers, by the dogs, and by our trainers. And when we, like Linda said, when you can go online now anywhere and buy these fake certifications and there is no such thing as a certified service dog, which is something that people don't understand. So they think they can go online, buy these kits, put on a vest, and take these dogs out when these dogs are not trained. And what happens is that when our service dogs who are well-trained, or any service dogs that are well-trained, come in contact with service dogs, quote, that are not trained, it can cause serious disruptions in the actual handlers who have service dogs and the tasks the dogs need to perform. So this is becoming an extremely, extremely difficult process to manage.
David Favor, you're a law professor at Michigan State University. Is there a legal remedy here waiting?
Well, there's the states are trying to do something about it. There is nothing on the horizon at the federal level, which is most of the laws we're actually talking about here. They've not suggested they're going to step forward and do anything about this problem. But upwards of 18 states have, in the last 3 or 4 years, adopted provisions that say it's perhaps a misdemeanor to misrepresent that you have a service animal when you don't. The difficulty is the practicality of enforcing those restrictions.
It's also difficult when you approach someone who has a legitimate concern and a legitimate service animal, and they feel singled out or persecuted because, you know, now they're being questioned.
Exactly. Yes, it's one of those human contacts. You know, there's an event, it happens, it's maybe, you know, a minute or two long, and then they separate and something else goes on. And it's not the sort of thing you can call a policeman in on or do anything like that with. The states are really pretty handicapped in actually being able to address this issue because the federal law preempts the state laws, and the federal law doesn't have any licensing specificity. It just requires the training that the previous speakers have talked about, and there's just a lack of remedies. The remedies provided in the federal law are when somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to do in allowing access to a legitimate service dog. That's where all the focus has been right now at the federal level, not the other way around.
So we're going to go to our first commercial break. Our first break, the number is 210-614-8980. I don't want to demonize people that do get the service dog certificates and vest and do all that, because I think they feel like they really do need those animals. I would love to hear from some folks about who went ahead and bought their vest from the Walmart or from eBay and got the certificate and their relationship and whether or not, you know, what they think about where they are in this process and if they think about what's happening with the higher level of service dogs, the ones that are highly trained, and what's happening in this legal process. The number again is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about assistance animals. Sometimes they're called companion animals or comfort dogs or service dogs. Service dogs, these are really highly trained, highly selected animals that have a specific task and they have a job to do. But then some of these other ones, you know, maybe they're just pets with a special vest that they got from Walmart. Well, what's wrong with that? The number to call in if you got a question or comment, 210-614-8980. This is another call from our weekend voicemail line. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Melissa, and I am part of a therapy dog team along with Kermit the Dog, Texas's first certified therapy dog working in funeral care. I'm noticing that funeral homes are going out and getting dogs and advertising and marketing them as a therapy dog when they have not done any training with that animal, which is a liability for the public as well as the funeral home. So my hope is that there are more defined lines between comfort dog, therapy dog, and service dog in the very near future in order to not only protect these animals that have taken the training, but also to protect the folks that actually have a need for a service dog or a certified therapy animal.
All right, so that brings up another great point. And let's go to Laurie Gualelko. She is the founder and CEO of Service Dogs Express. So a lot of businesses are using dogs now as a way to attract people. Can they be held at a higher standard?
Well, I do think that this would be an area for Linda, who works with the therapy dogs. There is a very clear distinction between the terminology for these types of dogs. So therapy dogs are dogs that have been trained to go into places to offer comfort to others. So they're highly trained, as Linda can attest to, and they go into places such as funeral homes or hospitals or schools. And what they do is they are brought by handlers who are trained, and they go in and they do work for others in a very secure setting, but they offer comfort to others. Now, those are therapy dogs. Then we have emotional support animals, and emotional support animals are also considered comfort pets, and emotional support animals are not allowed the same legal accesses as service animals. So an emotional support animal would be, say you have somebody who has very much difficulty leaving their home, agoraphobia, something like that, high anxiety. So they have these pets, and the pets offer them comfort through many different ways that are there are so many ways that the animals offer comfort. But these dogs do not have the same right to go out into public. And then you have service animals. Now, service animals are the same thing as assistance animals. I think using the term assistance animals kind of gets confused with service animals, and I should say dogs. But they're basically the same thing. Those are the ones that are allowed to go out into public and have access. And the public, like this caller who came in, to feel protected, to have the public feel protected when they go into different places, it is so crucial that the training and the regulations be followed so that the public is at ease, and so that the handlers who have these disabilities are not, as you were talking about, constantly questioned. Because there's only two questions that you're allowed to ask someone with a service dog. Is this a service animal, and what tasks does this dog perform? And a lot of people, when they bring their service dogs into places, people don't understand that that's the limit of what you can ask. You cannot ask, what is your specific disability? And that is where a lot of our clients come in, and I constantly get calls. I was denied access. I was assaulted by a manager at a certain place because they kept questioning me. Housing problems, things like that. There is, when a person has a disability and they have a service dog, they have a right to privacy about what their exact medical condition is, but they also do have to make sure that they and their dog are performing up to standards.
All right, I'm going to go to a caller right now, and the number to call in is 210-614-8980, and this is Dave. And I'm going to hit the button.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'd like to just make a comment regarding the comfort animals. I mean, I'm a grandfather, and I've been around for, you know, service dogs all my life, you know, people who had a legitimate disability. And I have a grandson who got snapped and bitten in a Home Depot. And Home Depot, basically, the employees have no way of really monitoring who's coming in and who's going. And my comment is really just more that the issue that we're running into is people with comfort dogs, the broad category of comfort dogs or comfort pets, they seem to be infringing on people who are not comfortable being around animals that are not trained to do anything. I mean, I've been in stores and had dogs come up and sniff my socks, and it's just an inappropriate and extremely uncomfortable thing. So I will take your comments off the phone. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that call. So David Favor, law professor at Michigan State University and the editor-in-chief for Animal Legal and Historical Center. What are the rights of someone who does get snapped at by a dog like that?
Well, there's to be general tort liability. In other words, somebody's brought an animal out into the public, and if they cause harm to another person, then obviously they're subject to a lawsuit for having caused that harm. I'm talking about an untrained dog, obviously. To bark at or snap doesn't normally result in a lawsuit because there's not any real damages. But you run into the problem of every now and then there actually is a real bite or something else occurs that causes actual harm to a human, and they simply would be liable for it.
But a store like any store, you know, you really don't have the ability to police who comes in with what type of animal, right?
Well, if the people are willing to lie about their need and what the category of the dog is, then that's where the business really is between a rock and a hard place. Because, as was previously suggested, the business can only ask two questions, and if those answers are both appropriate under the federal law, then the manager should let the person in. But if that was a false statement, then the dog is not trained appropriately. And while it's clear that the owner of the dog would be liable, it's not clear the level of the business and whether or not they would be liable. It's simply not clear. There haven't been enough cases to say anything about that.
It would probably take a really severe case in order to bring that forward. And fortunately, that hasn't happened yet, but still people are wondering, you know, what is the law? Linda Porter Weslaff, the board member for the Therapy Dogs of San Antonio, Therapy Animals of San Antonio. Let me ask you about that real quick. So it's not just dogs. People have different types of therapy animals.
Correct. Therapy animals are generally any domestic animal that meets the criteria for both socialization, temperament, and training.
So I've heard of someone having a weasel.
Yeah, we look at dogs and cats and rabbits, guinea pigs, horses would be, and some communities llamas are included, and in cities where potbelly pigs might be allowed, then they might be considered. Each species is evaluated for their own temperament and for behavior and for their health needs. So we don't use any. A ferret is considered a wild animal, not a domestic animal, so they would not qualify. Neither would snakes or reptiles.
I've seen people try and pass them off as
sure.
But that's a giveaway right now. If it's
right.
So how would a dog that is properly trained behave in a circumstance like at a restaurant or at a store?
Okay. Lori did a good job of differentiating between the types of labels. A service dog and an emotional support dog are really focused on the individual that they take care of or that they serve. A therapy dog is really designed to be a partner with the person that they're with and specifically to engage with the community. So their training and their evaluation is a little bit different. The expectation is a little bit different. A service dog and a emotional support dog in any environment should attune to their person and really stay with that person. So they should have basic obedience skills. They should sit and stay where they're asked to stay or down. They should heel beside the person. They should stay with that person. They would not jump up on somebody. They would not pull away from the person that they're with to go visit somebody else. They wouldn't bark or lick. Those kinds of things. So they would be controlled, and they would be reliably controlled in all situations. And they're trained for that, and they're evaluated for that. Evaluations are pretty extensive, so that we are able to test their response to equipment, to crowds, to invasive handling that kind of thing. They're to remain calm if somebody reaches out and grabs their fur. They're tested for that, the response to that. So that which what you'd expect would be a calm, reliable dog that stays focused on their person. A therapy dog is trained and evaluated for that, but therapy dogs are used deliberately to interact with other people. So given the cue from their owner, they might indeed go visit somebody. But the owner's job would be to be sure that that person that they're visiting wants to be visited. And then the dog would be expected to be calm and stand for petting or sit for petting or be ready to engage at whatever level the person they're visiting wants them to. They wouldn't be invasive or pushy or jumping or licking.
But if it's a service dog that's been trained, we're really not supposed to go up and start petting
right.
it. It's a job, the dog with a job.
Right. So and the dog should focus on their person and be left alone to do that.
But, you know, not everyone is crazy about dogs. There are people
that's
out there
true.
That have dog phobias.
Right.
And so when you bring a dog into a public space, you know, you're asking other individuals to have to cope with their own things, anxieties.
And that's where the federal law stepped in to try to protect the people with service dogs. And that's what's at risk when people abuse the labels, emotional support dog or service dog, and take them when they're not well trained. Because the service dog is going to stay with their person. So if you're walking beside somebody who has a phobia, they can walk past you and that dog will not interact with that person. Now, the person may be uncomfortable, but they shouldn't be violated in terms of their physical space or invaded.
Not triggered, hard triggered.
Right. A not so well-trained dog may not do that. And that's one of the potential problems with the lack of significant regulation and follow-through with that regulation is when people abuse or they don't have well-trained animals or they don't attend to their animals appropriately, then everybody, the people that legitimately need their service dogs, can be at risk.
So I got this email from Greg. I have personally witnessed a service dog at the local pharmacy licking and trying to eat food on the lower shelf. I notified the clerk and that food was removed. I saw another dog on a leash at a grocery store yesterday. Dogs carry parasites that can lead to human infection. I like dogs. I have one, but they should not be allowed to come into grocery stores, pharmacies, restaurants. Common sense! Exclamation mark. So some people might say, Greg, you're a dog hater. But the thing is, you have to be concerned about public support for animals. If there is a turn of the tide and suddenly public support is no longer in favor of these animals, then it could be a big loss to other people out there who actually depend on these animals.
Absolutely.
So Laurie said Service Dogs Express, is that your big concern?
That's one of the biggest concerns. First, to address a service dog that is properly trained would not be and should not be licking or doing any kind of sniffing at lower levels. They're taught to, with the term leave it or anything like that, they're taught to stay close to their handler with their focus on their handler.
Okay.
So if someone does see a dog doing that, that would kind of be a little bit of a tip off that this dog might not be up to par in training. That's not a huge violation, but it's something that a manager of a store or a person that's in the store might say, hey, why is the best dog
right.
doing that?
So we're going to take a break right here. We're going to come back. We're going to get to some more callers. What do you think ought to happen here? Are you concerned? Do we need to come up with a better regulation, certification? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. People who put vests on their dogs and call it a service dog, why is that not a good idea? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Public confusion, legal loopholes, and shady internet businesses have led to an epidemic of fake service dog certificates, vests, and harnesses for use by ordinary pets. And advocates for the disabled say this issue is creating big headaches for those who truly need the canine's assistance. The problem has gotten so bad that some people are calling for regulation, maybe a national database, maybe they're asking for the U.S. Department of Justice to take action. What are you seeing around you? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Should public awareness, like we're doing right now, be the answer? Many people may not be clear on what's happening when they do this. They feel like they may need the dog to get around during the day, but do they really? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Bonnie is on the line. Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to talk a little bit about emotional support animals. I'm hearing in this conversation a lot of talk about this. Obviously, people don't understand what they are. They're not. My husband has one, and he's not. We don't take him out in public. That's not his job. His job is to basically keep my depressed husband. He lays around too much. The dog cues him to get up and move and things like that.
All right, we've lost the call. Sorry, there wasn't a strong line there, cell phone line. So can we talk about that a little bit, Linda Porter Weslaff, about how dogs can be used in that way?
Sure. An emotional support dog. Animals provide for us a variety of things. Petting a dog decreases blood pressure, increases...
That's all proven.
Right. Decreases anxiety, increases some of those feel-good hormones, so that they change a person's mood, and that can sustain for a period of time. In addition to that, they are accepting, non-judgmental, always present. Dogs keep you in the here and now, so if you begin to focus on yourself too much or you're kind of drifting into a place that's not healthy for you to go, a dog will cue you to come back to the present. They can engage in spontaneous play. So there are lots of ways that emotional support animals and pets in general help us feel better and actually be better, healthier and more attuned to the present and to ourselves and to our environment. Those things aside, that transfers only into a public setting when the animal is able to attend to the person in a controlled manner so that they're not impacting other people or other situations. And that's where the critical piece is. I think everybody recognizes the benefit of the emotional component that an animal can bring to a person's life, especially a vulnerable individual. It's really more of an issue when they move out into a public area. And there are people that may need that animal's support in a public area. So we don't want to necessarily prevent people from having their animals in public. One solution to that would be to have the animal identified as a psychiatric service animal as opposed to an emotional support animal, so that they then fall under the federal regulations for service animals.
Yeah, but then people would be kind of stigmatized by having a psychiatric service animal with them. I mean, people should be allowed to just have a service animal with them and go about their business, and why that animal's there, that's their business.
Well, and a service, they would just be considered a service animal, so they wouldn't need to be identified unless somebody asks, what does this dog provide for you? The two questions they're allowed to ask. There's really not, I think, a lot of increased stigmatization for that. An emotional support animal kind of says the same thing, that right. I need this animal.
All right, another caller. We're getting a lot of calls. 210-614-8980. Samantha, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Okay, go ahead.
So I am actually, I've worked in, you know, the apartment industry for about 7 years now. And, you know, the topic of service animals versus emotional support animals has always been kind of, I guess, hot button issue for us. You know, it's always been that, you know, we just never really have wanted to ask a lot of questions. More recently, I would say in about the past 3 years, we've had, you know, this overwhelming amount of these, what are essentially fake letters that you can purchase online, you know, that kind of look like it's an ESA animal, but in reality, it's, you know, a letter that someone paid $10 for.
Right. And so Samantha, so let me ask you, if someone has those letters, do they have to still pay the pet deposit? Do are able to avoid that?
Well, if approved as an emotional support animal, the pet deposit and any fees do get waived. And so I think that's why a lot of these people are registering their pets as an emotional support animal to kind of bypass those fees.
So there's a financial incentive for some people to suddenly they're going to say that their dog is they need it for their well-being.
Yes, absolutely.
And are you concerned about that?
I am. You know, we just get a lot of people that, you know, who would otherwise not have an emotional support animal or, you know, don't necessarily have a legitimate need for one.
And so you think they're abusing the system?
I do feel that way.
Okay, Samantha, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. So let me go over to Laurie Galco at the Service Dogs Express. And do you see this as well? Do people are not only do they get around a pet deposit, but also their animals can fly for free on airlines if they have these certificates?
Yes, this is definitely a growing problem, but there's a very fine line. We deal with, I have dealt with the Air Carrier Access Act for years and Secretary of Transportation Fox in trying to regulate how service animals and emotional support animals should be treated when they are flying. And this is a huge, huge issue for us as a company because we have thousands of clients that rely on us to help us through this very, very tangled and now very messy process due to recent regulations put on. I think one important aspect that I wanted to address is that the term psychiatric service dog in actuality is, and Linda did correct this, it's a misnomer. Back in 2011, the ADA decided that the term service dog would apply to animals that provided all different kinds of services for their handlers, and included in that are psychiatric kind of services. And the problem is that the airlines and I can get to the housing in a second, but the airlines are making this division between what is a service dog and what is a psychiatric service dog and treating these human beings differently. And that is a huge problem because I would say probably at least 70% of our clients not only suffer with medical problems that they need their dogs to alert to, but they also have post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injuries, anxiety, and panic. And so they do not deserve to have to be treated any differently than anyone who has a service dog for any other reason. And the way I can definitely stand by that is that there have been numerous, numerous clinical studies that show that people who have PTSD or any kind of psychiatric problems, you can clearly see that on brain imaging. So it's a medical disability, just like anything else. We have people who have cardiac problems, and if their dogs are not 100% focused on them all the time, if they miss something, if they miss one little problem where a person's blood pressure drops or their cardiac rhythm goes off, and they're not able to alert to that, it can be disastrous. Well, the same thing can happen with someone who is somewhere and suffers a horrible flashback from maybe something that happened to them when they were deployed or something that happened to them in a civilian that traumatized them. If those dogs are not on it, alerting immediately, it can cause severe problems. And so I think that the airlines are going overboard and they're making discriminations that, in my opinion, I don't feel are legal. I think they're hurting people more than helping them. Yes, I do think that there are people that are taking advantage of things, such as with the housing. You can definitely get the pet right off if you have certainly a service dog or if you have an emotional support animal. And the Fair Housing Act does say that that is something that all housing places, dormitories, everything have to follow. But people, I think that the community at large needs to start taking better responsibility for their actions.
Right, and the first step towards that is making better awareness about what types of dogs are out there and what happens when you have a counterfeit service dog, you know, bogus service dog, you know, and why that you need to think twice about that. We're going to take another break. We've got a lot of calls here. We'll get them on the air when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980. Assistance animals, service dogs, what's real, what's not real, what should be, how should we hold people accountable? Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about service animals and some people who will buy a vest online, call their dog, their pet, a service animal, and what harm that could be doing. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Ann is on the line. Ann, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to go back to the airlines, and I really do think that a lot of this whole problem was created by the airlines. And the restrictions that they have on the animals that can go into the cabin rather than, you know, travel as cargo. And they really haven't addressed that. I've had dogs my entire adult life, and they are so well behaved that people come up and ask if they're, you know, service dogs or therapy dogs. But the airlines, you know, refuse to allow that dog to travel in the cabin. They want it to be cargo because it's over 20 pounds, and they take no responsibility. And they offer no alternative to, you know, for your animal to be transported other than as a piece of cargo. And frankly, the death rates are fairly high. And so I just avoid flying with my animals and travel, you know, drive halfway across the country to visit family. But I think a lot of this lies with the airline.
And so you see that some people think, wow, the solution is I get one of these $20 vests online and boom, problem solved.
Exactly. I had an incredibly well-trained border collie, and everyone told me, this was 15 years ago, but everyone told me, like, just get a vest. And I said, I won't do that. I can't do that. I don't think it's right. But that, I think, is what they are encouraging people to do. And I think that's why this business has grown the way it has, this, you know, bogus business online.
Okay. All right. Great point there, Ann. Thank you so much. Got a lot of calls here, so I'm going to go straight to Tim. Hey, Tim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. You know, echoing on what Ann was saying, I think we can all agree that there's no excuse for dishonesty or fraudulent behavior in getting these vests and getting animals on. But the airlines have in large part created this problem for many of the reasons that Ann said, but taking it even a step further, my wife has a 15-pound dog that fits in a carrier that's much smaller than the average carry-on bag, and she can walk onto that plane with that carrier that nobody even knows a dog is in it. It goes under the seat entirely, yet she has to pay $150 for doing that when she has no other carry-on. So why they can't at least say, well, if it's your only carry-on and it fits under the seat, fine, we can do that. Let them take a deposit if they think that's necessary for some kind of damage or something, which doesn't happen. But I just don't see why they have to charge for an animal that fits under the seat in your only carry-on.
Great point, Tim. Let's go to Amy now. Amy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to share an experience I recently had. I walked to Fort Sam Houston National Cemetery, which is close to my mom's home. My dad recently died. And I was walking through there with my boxer, who's well-trained. He was on a leash. to go visit my father, and I was approached by one of the cemetery directors over there, and he was really angry, and he said, "You can't be over here without, he has to be a service dog." And the guy said, "If I see you over here again, I'm going to I'll call VA security on you." So, I went ahead and I knew I didn't, you know, I knew this was dishonest because he's not really a service dog, but I went online and I paid $65 and got the tag and the ID and now we're going to walk over there and hopefully not be harassed. And he, my dog has never peed on a headstone or anything like that. He's very well trained. And, but that's, you know, that's what I did just because they told me he had to be a service dog.
Got it, Amy. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate you calling in with that story. Let me go first to, Linda Porter Weslaff with the Therapy Animals of San Antonio. You hear what people are saying. This is a reality check. This is the world where people live, and they're making decisions based on that.
Sure, and it's understandable. Nobody wants limits set when they've done the right thing by training their dog, and they're responsible pet owners and dog handlers, to have a limit set that's not really necessary for them to, say, access the cemetery. One would question what's the harm in that and why can't they? And maybe overregulation is not necessarily in our best interest. When you look at the increasing focus on animals in people's lives and the increasing benefit that people receive, maybe the question is, how do we open up situations so that more animals can have access in more places, but do the work on the other end of being sure that those animals are trained and socialized so that animals in general are more appropriate in terms of their behaviors, et cetera, when they're in public.
Well, if we have a society, I mean, people want a more dog-friendly society, and we just do. And there are cities that are better at it than others. And when you have places where you can bring your dog, restaurants, and then you don't need to lie. You don't need to deceive because suddenly it's hey, we're dog friendly. So maybe we need to be looking at the overall environment as like, well, what do we do with dogs? But let me get Lee on the line here. He's got a great point here. And Lee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I guess I wanted to say that, you know, I was attacked by dogs when I was about 12, 13 years old. So I have a real phobia about dogs, and I don't want to be around them. I have no rights when I get on a plane. I have no rights when I go in a building. I see a dog. I was in a group session one time, and the dogs were there, and I just got totally, I mean, I don't know what was going on with me, but I had to leave. So just imagine if I get on a plane with a dog. What happens? Where are my rights?
Lee, great point. Thank you for bringing that up. Some people are triggered by dogs, just having them around. You know, a lot of us have dog experiences that are negative, and they come back. So let me go to Laurie Galelko. Can you respond to that? What should we tell people like Lee?
Well, I do feel for Lee. I understand. And that is something that is an issue. Unfortunately, the way that the laws are written right now is that, and this also goes back to the previous caller at Fort Sam Houston, the laws are that service dogs are allowed access everywhere except for military installations and places of worship. And so with the military installation at Fort Sam Houston, I can certainly identify with that. I take my service dog there to visit my mother who passed away, my mother-in-law, and we go on to the cemetery. But my dog is a fully trained service dog and wears the vest. And the fact is that that is considered a military installation. So unfortunately, some military installations, they're all different, and some of them will allow you to bring your dog on, and some of them have very strict guidelines. And those guidelines have to be
followed to protect the public. And people like the caller that just called in, unfortunately, because service dogs are allowed access everywhere, even in places where there's food or where people might have allergies and things like that, what happens is that there has to be, I believe, a consciousness about where the dog is and the other people around there, and how can they make the situation more comfortable for people like the previous caller.
Right. So, are you saying that you should have just left the dog, rather than getting the vest online and taking it to the National Cemetery? The choice was, there was no choice. The rule is you can't bring a dog unless it's a service dog. Just deal with it. Accept the rule.
Unfortunately, right now, that's the way it stands with military installations.
What about the airlines and people saying, they're charging us an arm and a leg. They're really hassling me. All I got to do is just go get the vest, and my life is so much easier.
It can't be. It cannot be. I think that education is the most important thing, getting the word out. When people go to websites, they need to go to reputable websites that have factual information about what are the laws. And I have to say that in all my years of most of my job as the CEO now is not so much the training. I oversee my trainers. But I deal with a lot of these legal issues. And I have to say, David, your site for the Animal Legal and Historical Center has been the primary source that I go to when I have to cite different codes for people who are trying to cause problems for my clients. So I really, really appreciate that website. And then... of course, Linda, your therapy dogs program is exceptional. But people...
They have to realize that they're making a decision. And when they decide to take the easy way out, they may not realize it, but they are also putting a burden on others who really depend upon these animals. And the walls are closing in. Regulations are being put in place. And it's going to hurt those who really depend upon these animals. That's something that we all have to think about when we make decisions. Thank you all so much for joining us as we have been talking about service animals on this afternoon on The Source. Thanks for tuning us in.